Jaguars Drive Time. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Ashlyn Sullivan. Jaguars Drive Time starts right now.
A much different scene than the one that we witnessed and experienced in Cleveland on Sunday. Beautiful morning. Thanks for waking up with Jags Drive Time. We've got a half an hour to get you caught up on all the big things from yesterday. Good morning and welcome into the studios here at Everbank Field. Brian Sexton along with John Osher. And John, I trust that you returned comfortably.
That was great.
From your nice, warm seat in the press box.
My hands are a little dry, but I got some lotion this morning.
Yeah, you found a way to make it through. Yeah. I'll say this. It was a different weather experience than most of those players had had. Mm-hmm. The snow coming down at various times throughout the course of the day, the wind picking up. It wasn't too bad. There was at no point, John, did I ever feel like I want to go in the tunnel or I don't want to go back out on the field. It wasn't that bad. But what I thought was interesting was what Dante Fowler said after the game. He said, I'm a Florida kid. He said, now I feel like I can play in cold weather.
Yeah, and there were spots of the game, again, from observing in the press box.
Behind the glass?
From a distance, behind a partition, there were spots where it appeared that it became a factor in stretches. And there was one stretch in the first half, I remember, where they're driving for a field goal. And I'm thinking, boy, they should probably just go ahead and spike it and kick the field goal before another squall comes through
right.
or before another wind comes through. So I think it did, or I assume, and you were out there in the elements,
I can confirm that,
because,
yes.
You know, Nanook of the North over here.
I think it's Nanook, but I'll go with you.
Well, yeah. It felt like it had surging effects on the game as much as anything. But the important thing is Jags got through it.
The wind swirled, and right before Josh Lambeau tried the 41-yard kick, the one that he missed.
Right.
You could tell that he was going to try to send it a little further to the left,
yeah.
And the squall died a bit, which is why it kind of kept going.
Yeah.
But really, I was standing there thinking, well, I wonder what he's going to do here, because this wind is blowing and swirling in the stadium. It was a crazy day. It was a lot of fun to be on mm-hmm. the field, believe it or not.
I bet.
Every once in a while, I mean, you just got a sense, especially when the game was close and the Browns fans were into it. It felt like, I don't want to say playoff football because they were 0-9, but you know, it felt like that time around the holidays where the games get bigger.
I felt like AFC North football, Northeast kind of football. I do think it was important for the Jaguars to get through, and I think the weather, I haven't had a chance to talk to Nate Hacker or anybody on the offense in detail about it, but it did feel like the weather was a factor in terms of let's not let this weather force us into any mistakes and get behind the defense. Let's let the defense ride it out. So it did feel like, in terms of play calling, in terms of approach, I think they wisely took the weather into play.
All right, well, another Florida kid who spent the weekend in the sunny confines of Gainesville, and yesterday right here in these studios, is Ashlyn Sullivan. Hi, Ashlyn. How'd you make it through your weekend?
I was just fine. I was nice and warm. I was feeling for you guys watching that TV broadcast, though.
Here's a question. You know, when you look at TV ratings, and over the course of the last, you know, 15, 18 years, you get a game every year with the snowy. The ratings go up. People are interested in it. Did you find yourself more compelled by the weather than you might normally be?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it was just cool to watch. But I also thought, I mean, basically the whole pregame show was just about the weather. I very rarely heard anything about the matchup itself, which I thought was interesting that they were playing it up, and that is for sure.
Well, I don't know whether you heard, but John was in the press box.
I was
on the field. So I can tell you anything you want to know about the weather. John can tell you what he observed. I can tell you what I experienced. So, you know, over the course of the week, as we go through it, feel free to ask me any
questions. I'm sure you'll have some stories to tell.
Oh, I do. Absolutely. What do you got for us in big things?
First thing is first place in the AFC South. Now, on Friday's show, Doug said that they couldn't really even focus on being in first place until they won this game yesterday. Well, they did that. Now, in his post-game comments yesterday, he said first place can disappear like that. And Brian, you just gave an example before about the Oakland Raiders and how being good, it can go away that quickly.
You know, and that's a great point. John, the Jags have that one game lead, mm-hmm. right? And it can disappear in a heartbeat if the Titans win next week and you don't beat the Cardinals, because they still have that tiebreaker
right.
from the head-to-head. It is imperative. It feels like playoff baseball, where every pitch matters, or NCAA, you know, March Madness, where every rung on the ladder that you climb, mm-hmm. you cling to a little bit tighter. It's fun, first of all.
Right.
But this is about holding where you are, winning week to week, and staying ahead of the Titans.
What you hope is that at some point over the next 3 or 4 weeks, It's all imperative on the Jaguars continuing to win. You hope that the Titans lose again and you can get a two-game lead going into that finale. Until you get that, yes, you're in first place, but you're not really in first place in terms of anything after the season, because if you're up and the Titans beat you, then they have head-to-head, and then they win the division. So in order to really get any sort of breathing room, a one-game lead is not enough. You got to get a two-game lead. The positive for the Jaguars out of all this, they're starting to get some distance on the field in terms of the wild card. So you're starting to get a little bit of a safeguard. If you can win a couple more and get up on that, then the last game of the season, I know we're looking way ahead, becomes about the division, and you have the fallback of wild card. They're in unbelievable shape for the wild card, and that seems like it's happened sort of overnight.
The other thing that's worth noting is it was hostile up there, right? I mean, we talked about the weather. There were 52,000 is what they announced, mm-hmm. people there, more than I would have thought would have been there for an 0-9 team with the weather as bad as it was, and they were loud. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some hostility there. And what I witnessed was a Jaguars team that embraced the conditions. They embraced the fans. They embraced the weather. And, you know, they're 5-1 away from Everbank Field this year. 4-1 on the sure. road, so to speak. And then, of course, the win in London. This is a team that seems to they love the underdog rule. They love the let's come beat you rule. Being on the road doesn't bother them at all.
Well, and before we get to this thought, notable, no taunting stuff, no extra stuff yesterday that hurt him. I have to believe that
almost
was a
before
major...
the game, there was a little chippiness before the game. The officials got in before anything could happen. With
yeah, that's
Deshaun,
probably not
going to
get you, but yeah. a personal foul. So, but I think it was clearly emphasized during the game. We don't want that. As much as people don't like, and there are people who don't like the chippiness and the mouthiness of this team, but I think that's an element that has created this us against them feeling they have. There's a confidence. There's a brashness. There's a disbelief that anything in the past mattered, and we're going to go show we're good. I think that plays into being able to take it on the road. I think, you know, I don't want to say that all the taunting stuff is part and parcel with being good, but there's something about the attitude of this team that enables them to go travel.
Did you find yourself at all?
And us I'm sure, against them sort of thing.
Yeah, look, before the game, as they came out on the field, there was a group of Browns fans. And by the way, there was a good group of Jaguars fans. They were well represented in that stadium. But they turned and they kind of got into it with the crowd. That's Malik and Deshaun and Telvin. They like that. That's who they are. Okay, fine. Then after the game, they just turned into this.
Right.
What do you think now, right? I mean, they really do embrace it. I that's not a strong enough verb. They enjoy the conflict.
Look, this team has gone a long time where when they walked into opposing stadiums, the opposing fans didn't really care, didn't really worry, and they didn't know who the Jaguars were. People ask me, are the Jaguars getting a reputation for this kind of thing? Well, they're getting a reputation for being a tough, brash team. I think some of it could be I don't know that all the stuff you're talking about is necessary, but it's who they are and it's their identity. And for once, for the first time in a long time, this team has an identity, and I think it does, does it have a reputation? Yes, it has a reputation that you better worry about this team when it comes to your town.
All right, Jaguars 7-3 and headed to Arizona next week to take on the Cardinals. We've got much more to come ahead on Jags Drive Time here on TuneIn Radio. Ashlyn is with us again for Big Thing number 2 when we return. Jags Wired is a brand new show that brings you closer to the field than anywhere else.
Let's go!
We mic up the player.
We're giving it out wholesale today, baby.
Giving you exclusive access to what's happening on the sideline.
Let's set this tempo.
And on the field.
Hey, you can't block me.
We break down every aspect of Sunday's game, taking you inside the film room and the locker room.
And we beat a good football team.
Jags Wired airs Tuesday nights on Fox 30 at 11:35 and on demand on Jaguars.com. Jags Wired. Don't miss out.
What do you call a pack of Jaguars? A jamboree. The Jacksonville Jaguars want to offer a big thank you to the 5 local companies who've made the Jaguars Jamboree a party that never stops. Everbank, Baptist Health, Dreamfinders Homes, Publix, and U.S. Assure. Each of these partners provides unmatched support and dedication to the team year in and year out and help make game day special. Jaguars fans, join the Jamboree and support these companies and all the partners who support the team.
Welcome back to Jags Drive Time on this Victory Monday. Big thing number two, and it's an injury report, and it's pretty healthy. Now, guys, at this point in the season, you see teams with a much more extensive injury report than this Jaguars team. You're hoping to get some guys back on the offensive line this week. We got to talk about Leonard Fournette. A lot of people were unsure if he was even playing. He goes runs for 111 yards. So now you got to think he's in it for the home stretch now.
Absolutely. And before we talk about the Jags, just, again, looking around the National Football League, you see some injuries that... So the Texans lost Deonta Foreman, the rookie running back from Texas, who hadn't been a huge presence, but this is a team that's depleted already with the injuries. He has two touchdowns, and in the middle of a run, I think he finished with 65 yards, tears his Achilles. Yep. Then the word out of Chicago is that Leonard Floyd, the first-round pick a year ago, guy that's been pretty productive. I think he has 12 sacks since the start of last season. Not breaking records, but still a good, productive player. You know, he's done with what they term a serious knee injury. Understand there were injuries for the Rams in their secondary. And when you look at it, the Jaguars have not had to deal with that at this point. The defense is largely healthy.
The biggest truth about the NFL is that once you get to the playoffs, it's a league of attrition. You're hoping to get to the playoffs as healthy as possible and get the right matchups. Injuries, especially if they happen in waves at a certain position, can absolutely take a team down. You've seen some signs of that with the Jaguars. On the offensive line and the receiver core, you know, there's a reason this offense, and it wasn't a top 10, I mean, a top 10 scoring potent level offense before, but there's a reason that it slid a little bit. You're down without Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson now, and you're down without two offensive linemen. I thought the key yesterday after the game, Leonard Fournette came out and said he doesn't expect to be 100% healthy again this season. He's going to deal with this ankle, but it also sounded very much like he is going to play through it. If they've got 10 games left, Brian, if they've got that many left, he's planning to go on that ankle no matter what.
A couple things stood out about that. The 111 yards, and he had one, you know, 29-yard sort of breakaway run. That was it. 28 carries and 4 yards per carry average was impressive for a guy in colder weather on a slick track with a bad ankle. Well, down to offensive linemen.
And he was back to, a week ago against the Chargers, it didn't feel like he had those runs where he willed his way from 1 to 3 yards, meaning it was going to be a 1 yard gain and he got three. Yesterday, it seemed like he was back to willing his way to yards, which beyond the breakaway stuff early was sort of his identity. It seemed after the game, and he told several reporters, and I was there, look, this is how I'm going to feel. I'm not going to be 100% healthy. Doug's got a good plan for resting me, but it sounded like there's going to be games the rest of the season where he has a big run, he comes out, he gets the ankle right for a couple plays, and goes back in. Sounds like that will be the MO for Leonard Fournette going forward.
By the way, and people saw yesterday, the Browns do have a lot of talent on the defensive line. I thought Danny Shelton looked like Ted Washington at times. Unblockable, if you remember that big wide body used to play for the Bills and the Raiders and has played all over the place. The injuries on the offensive line, they need to get Jeremy Parnell back out there.
Yeah.
90, Ogba was really giving Josh Wells fits. And, you know, for everything Josh does, he can play both sides of the ball. He's not that power player that Parnell is. But here's the good news. You're going to get him back.
Right.
You're going to get Patrick Omame back. I mean, that's where this team is they have been fortunate, as you said, not to have the attrition. And even the injuries they have had outside of Allen Robinson have not been season-ending.
You're going to get guys hurt. What you don't want is dealing with guys on IR. As long as they're on the injury report, as long as you're talking about them on Sunday morning as inactives, a guy you didn't mention was Allen Hurns. Allen Hurns at some point gets back. You hope that it all lines up where they get back at the right time for key games. That's part of the coin flip nature of the league in the last 5-6 weeks of every season, especially for contending teams. A few weeks ago, I came out and said I thought the Jaguars would be fine with Leonard Fournette out of a game. You can usually take one or two injuries. Right now, they're happening in waves at spots, and that's where you start getting third guys in as opposed to the top backup, and that's where teams get in trouble.
By the way, quick shout-out, D.D. Westbrook had 3 catches for 35 yards. He did make a nice play on that third down conversion. It was a big third, I think third and 11,
absolutely,
down the sideline. It showed the ability to get beyond the coverage on a day where throwing the ball that deep, you know, wasn't always in the mix.
And has anybody seen a replay where he didn't catch the ball that was in question?
Well, I couldn't see it from the angle we had on the field.
The angle I saw, and I know it's a hot topic, is why I bring it up. I saw an angle where the ball was blocked. I'm assuming that the official who made the call thought that he saw a bobble because his feet were both down, but I digress.
Well, we're going to talk about the officials here in this next segment because we're going to talk about defense. Ashlyn rejoins us for Big Thing 3.
Yes, and John, I have to say on the TV broadcast, they were saying how it wasn't about him being in bounds. It was possession of that ball, and I know that's what they were talking about, that being the dispute of the call. But Big Thing number 3, a day for the defense yet again. 5 sacks. 5 takeaways, now 5 defensive touchdowns on the season. This defense, it was dominant, and it helped them win again. Now, guys, I know I wasn't around for the 1990 defense, but not to show your age, you guys were. So tell me, are they better than that team?
The 99 defense? Without a doubt. Yeah. There's no doubt. That 99 team had nice players, and Tony Brackens was a special player. But there are a lot of special players on this defense.
The 99 defense was a statistically good defense, and it was a good defense. It led the NFL. But
it also had a great offense, putting points on the board.
It didn't scare you the way this team does. There were moments. I mean, they blitzed very well. Kevin Hardy had a great season that year. Tony Brackens, Gary Walker, they had players.
And there was a game where in Pittsburgh, if you remember Three River Stadium, where they took control of it, forced turnovers, had a couple safeties. But that team
wasn't the identity of that team.
This team can do it, it appears, any Sunday.
It's done it a remarkable number of times. When you start adding up the things they've done that you walk downstairs out of the press box and say, well, I've never seen that before. 10 sacks week one, 10 sacks against the Colts, a shutout against the Colts, 184 yards yesterday. 184 yards barely got mentioned. It's rare to hold a team 184 yards, and the reason you don't mention it is they just held Cincinnati 2 weeks ago to the same thing. They held Phillip Rivers on the last 6 drives to 20 yards. They're doing things that are absurd, and they're doing it every week. They're scoring points, 5 touchdowns. You know, I'm sure there's a graphic somewhere with all the ones. They're the top-rated defense in the scoring, yards, passing yards, sacks. You don't do this. And the last few
takeaways, by the way, 23 takeaways. They had 18 going into the bowl game.
And I think it leads.
Yeah, it should lead. I mean, it's across the board, John.
But
they do what they want to do.
Stat, and you know, you can sit there and you can list all the stats, and the stats are great. But even more than stats, they're doing it when it matters. Yesterday in the second half, it was easy to see why the Jaguars' offense was taking the approach it was taking. You had a wet field where the only thing you thought was going to beat you was a flub by the offense turning into an easy Browns touchdown. It was hard to imagine the Browns scoring at any point in the second half, so you start playing your odds. You can play your odds with this defense because it looks like it's impenetrable at the key moments of the game, and it's the key moments of the game where it's been really good the last couple of weeks.
Well, if you go back, here's the thing that was really impressive. So yesterday, Calais and Yannick combine on the tackle sack strip, right? And Fowler picks it up and he's headed to the end zone. Now we know that they shouldn't have blown the whistle. That would have been a major problem, by the way, if the Browns had been able to come back and score.
I tweeted immediately it was a mammoth issue.
Mammoth, huge.
Because it should have locked down the game.
Absolutely.
And it, by definition, kept the game alive.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, Doug said afterwards it was a mistake, and it was a mistake. But it is a major, major mistake.
It's got to be a point of emphasis for the officials next year. When in doubt, don't blow the whistle. You can go back and look at it.
Right. Now, in retrospect, it feels minor. But
it wasn't at the time.
They had 3 timeouts.
Yeah.
The Browns were going to get the ball back because of the way the Jaguars were playing. They weren't going to take a chance enough to get a first down. It was a major, major mistake.
Now, here's my point. It happened in Houston as well, where they had a touchdown pulled off the board, and then the 2-3 plays later, they do it again. So almost as if to say, okay, you take that one away, we get this one. Yannick does the same thing, gets around the tackle, strips the ball, and, of course, the most opportunistic of Jaguars, Telvin Smith, falls on it in the end zone. It's just that ability to say,
we're
going to do it.
And give Dante Fowler some credit on that last play. It's hard to tell, but my son pointed out when I got home last night, it looked like Dante blocked a guy off of the ball, blocked a Browns guy off of the ball, and allowed Telvin to get the fumble. And I think Dante was aware enough to get the guy out of the way and clear the way for Telvin to recover a fumble. That's the sort of feeding frenzy that this defense is on right now. Right. It's absurd to get a touchdown on defense, have it taken away, and then get another. Those things
don't happen.
Second
time they've done that this year. And they have 5 defensive touchdowns.
Right. The aggression and the confidence and the ability, you know, sometimes you're sitting there during a game and you say, boy, it'd be nice to get a sack fumble here. Well, 9 times out of 10 doesn't happen because they don't happen. With these guys, when you say it, it happens.
Yannick Ngakoue, career high 9 sacks now, 2.5 yesterday. Calais has 11.5 sacks, and Dante Fowler has 6.5.
I think it's 6.5 or 7.5.
Yeah,
and
Malik has 5. So, I mean, you legitimately got 3 guys that should get to 10, and you could have 4 guys get to 10 if Malik gets hot like he did late last season.
Well, a lot of credit to Unique Ngakoue. Not only does he have the sacks, and sacks are great, and sacks matter, but pressures matter more. And Unique in the last month has probably had 8-9 pressures that could have easily been sacks. He's a legitimately big-time pass rusher. I thought last year he was a good statistical pass rusher who took advantage of the situation
and
showed potential. He matters on an infinitely number of more plays than he did last year, and that's important.
In case you're wondering, the Jaguars have, in 1999, had 3 guys hit 10 sacks or more, Kevin Hardy, Tony Brackens, and Gary Walker. There's a blast from the past. See if they can get to 3 or even 4 over the final 6 games of the regular season. We'll take a quick 60-second pause, and when we return, Ozone Snapshot here on Jags Drive Time on TuneIn Radio.
Jaguars All Access presented by Fields Auto Group is the only local show taking you inside the huddle with your favorite team.
Give me everything you got. Let's go.
Each week, Jags big man in the middle, Calais Campbell, and a teammate join Jeff Lagerman and me, Brett Martineau, at Mellow Mushroom in Avondale for insight and access you can't get anywhere else. Come out and be a part of the show live or tune in Mondays at 7 p.m. on CBS 47, your official Jaguar stations. Jaguars All Access presented by Fields Auto Group. Don't miss out.
Jags fans, it's time to win today. Get Jaguar season tickets so you don't miss a minute of the action at the bank this fall.
Touchdown! A pick six for Jalen Ramsey!
When you lock in on any season ticket package, you win today. Receive exclusive member benefits, including Jaguars playoffs and Daly's Place concert purchasing priority. Be a part of the number one game experience in the NFL. Visit jaguars.com/win today and pick your seats. Call 904-633-2000 today.
Welcome back to Jags Drive Time here with you with Ozone Snapshot. Brian, Section 235, I was wrong. Our defense is just that good. Doesn't matter how it looks, a win is a win.
Yes.
Yes.
And the defense is that good. And it's a I thought it would be better than last year. I thought it would be good. I don't think anybody expected this. A key is something you said earlier, though, Brian. They've been healthy. You know, knock on whatever this is.
Formica,
is it or granite? It's unbelievable the pressure they place on an offense, and it's unbelievable what they've been able to do at the end of games. With the game on the line, often you see teams start to come back. You see them start to get close. In the last 2 weeks, I'm not saying the Browns are the level of the Chargers offensively, but when you shut teams down and you adjust to their adjustments and then they get nothing afterward, that's stuff that puts you in elite category and you don't see it very often.
I don't think the Browns were going to score on that last drive before Kizer coughed it up, but there was a little hint of momentum,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they were moving down the field and then it was sack, done,
right?
Caused the strip. And obviously we saw what they did on the very next drive. The thing that has impressed me week in and week out is just their will and mm-hmm. how they hold each other accountable. Now, you're going to do this,
sure.
and I'm going to do that, and here we go. They not only expect to do it, they expect each other to do it. And I don't know that I've seen that. I mean, maybe the Ravens in 2000 were like that,
right.
or, you know, what the great Steeler defense is. But this is, not trying to categorize them, but this is a special defense.
Well, you keep getting questions compared to the Ravens, compared to the Bears. We're not there yet.
Right.
But if you're talking about formulas to get where you want to go, we have seen this formula work. It basically worked for Seattle in I think it was 13 they won it. Worked for Denver. Worked for the Bucks back in the day, 02, which for guys like you and me are back in the day.
Remember, yeah.
And it worked for the Ravens.
Laugh, actually.
Well, it can work, and it can take you a long way because this team right now has a formula that it believes will work. And when things get squirrely in games, they have a formula that they know they will go back to. They don't have to worry about what they are. They know offensively in a game like yesterday, look, we're not going to take huge chances. We're not going to put ourselves in bad situations because this defense will carry us. They have an identity and they know who they are. Very few teams have that. And The Jaguars so obviously have it compared to whatever they had in the last 4 or 5 years. It's a remarkable turnaround on that front.
All right, Ashton, what else?
Kyle from Noblesville, Indiana. Jacksonville Jaguars are the AFC North champions. When will I be able to get my shirt on the online store?
Might have to make that one on your own. But
surprised you weren't entrepreneurial and jump in on that.
Yeah.
That could make some money.
The amazing thing is, though, I don't know how much sweeping the North. Okay, it's great. But the level of domination in those games, 116-20 is a margin for, you know. Yeah. Significant in that is I keep hearing when I watch NFL Network about the Patriots and the Steelers being up here and everybody else sort of being here. I don't know.
Don't either.
30-9 still
kind of
resonates
in yours.
Well, and I don't think they're a 30-9 winner over the Steelers every week. But would it surprise you if they go beat that team again?
Nope. And I'm telling you.
Is the matchup bad all of a sudden?
No.
Now, it's not a 20-point matchup, but it's not a game that you would go into checking on all the boxes on Pittsburgh's side.
A couple years ago, we went into New England. It was a bad matchup.
Sure.
We knew it. They put 51 up. We knew what it was going to be. It's nowhere close to that anymore.
This defense makes any matchup a winnable matchup.
Ashlyn?
Last big thing, or I'm sorry, Ozone Snapshot. Jeremy from Dodge City. Let's not let Fowler run on an obvious fumble. Refs, they strike again. Now, we just talked about this, but fans are upset, that's for sure.
Well,
they're talking about the Jags in Dodge City, Kansas.
Well, yeah. Long-time writer there. But it was a struggle yesterday for the refs. And I'm never a believer that nobody's against anybody in the NFL. The refs don't sit around in conference and say, okay, we're going to get them in the third quarter here, Brian. This is how it's going to work. It doesn't happen that way. But yesterday, I thought they did overcome two calls. I thought the Westbrook catch should have been a catch. I sort of get why they didn't overturn it. If they didn't see him possess and they thought he didn't possess, then maybe there's nothing to overturn in their minds.
Right.
It's the irrefutable evidence thing that seems to not be into play this year that I'm curious about because, and this really doesn't have anything to do with the Fowler play yesterday, but there's been a trend this year of the referees looking at the replay and saying, well, it looks like this should have been the call. We're piecing things together. Not supposed to be that. It's supposed to be if the guy in the sports bar looks up and sees, well, that was the wrong call, then you reverse the call. It's supposed to reverse the obvious call. And it's gone away from that a little bit. And I don't think that's the spirit of the rule.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this edition of Jags Drive Time on TuneIn Radio. Don't forget, tonight, Jaguars All Access from Mellow Mushroom over in the Avondale area. Calais Campbell will be there, 11.5 sacks and a defense that's on top of the NFL. So get on by there, Jeff and Brent, the whole crew, coming at you on CBS 47 starting at 7 o'clock tonight. For John Osier, Ashlyn Sullivan, Joe Fortunato, and Patrick Cavanaugh, enjoy a beautiful day in Jacksonville where the 7-3 Jaguars are in sole place of first possession in the AFC South for the first time in a long time.